Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're going to stick around a bit tonight. We have, I don't know if you'd call it an interesting show. This first hour, we're going to have Uncle Mike's Story Corner. I've been trying to get to Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Although we have changed topics, we'll save the Cuba story for perhaps later on in the week. Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight is history-making, because Uncle Mike's Story Corner consists of two different chapters by two different writers. How about that? The first writer is Jennifer Lowenstein, and the second writer is Sharifa Suri. Stick around. Did you watch 60 Minutes on Sunday? I did not, but somebody sent me the one segment that I'm going to refer to here in a second, and several of you wrote to me about that segment. There's something called the Remote Area Medical Volunteer Corps, or RAM, R-A-M, Remote Area Medical Volunteer Corps. They have a website, ramusa.org. That's ramusa.org. I went to the website today on the suggestion of several of the listeners to this program, and it's really something to see. Crooks and Liars explained that if you're looking for a story that shows the really crappy state of health in America, all you have to do or have done was watch 60 Minutes last night. 60 Minutes traveled to Knoxville, Tennessee to film a free clinic in that city, set up by a charity group called Remote Area Medical Volunteer Corps, or RAM. The charity was initially started in the 90s by Stan Brock, who is a former co-star of Wild Kingdom. And the idea was to give health care relief to remote areas of Latin America. But if you watched the segment, and I'm sure you can get it online, it's clear that our healthcare system, for too many people, doesn't look too much different from that of a third world country. Mr. Brock, Stan Brock, has no family. He takes no salary. He has no home. He's completely dedicated to remote area medical, to RAM, as are the doctors and nurses who volunteer their time and expertise. The local response to this RAM clinic in Knoxville was amazing and yet deeply saddening. As it was shown on 60 Minutes, hundreds of people showed up for the clinic. Many drove hours to get there and waited up to 7 hours just to get a spot in line to be seen and by a doctor. Ultimately, hundreds had to be turned away. Now, contrary to the pig man Rush Limbaugh and the now dead Ronald Reagan, these were not Cadillac-driving welfare queens. They were just average working Americans who are either underinsured or have no insurance at all. And the most disheartening part of it all, on the one hand, is to see how many of these people had avoided seeking medical treatment for years because they couldn't afford it. And they're now reduced to begging for help. It's an ugly sight in a country like the United States. It's just, you know, this is a part, I don't care, Democrat, Republican, I don't care. This is something that is just beyond belief to me, that here in the United States, as screwed up as we are, and folks, we are screwed up. As screwed up as we are, you would think that we would provide medical care. I mean, just as a birthright. But then again, I used to think that jobs were a birthright in the land of the free and the home of the great, right? Or the home of the brave, or whatever the hell it is. I used to think jobs were a birthright. I used to think that private telephone calls and letters were a birthright. Huh? How about that? Jesus, God, I am so old, I can remember a time when you could actually send a letter. No, I don't mean like A, B, C, D. I mean a letter. That's something you write on paper, you put it in an envelope, seal it, put a stamp on it, and mail it. M-A-I-L, mail it. That means you take it to a post office or drop it in a mail pickup box somewhere. Or if you live out in the country, you leave it in your mailbox and put the flag up. A letter. And you knew that the letter was inviolate. First class mail. We have laws on the books that say opening a first-class letter is a federal crime. You can go to prison. It's a felony. You can go to prison for 5 years for opening a letter. Well, that's the way it used to be. So I thought privacy was an American birthright. I thought having a job was an American birthright. I thought going to church or not going to church was American birthright, or temple or mosque or whatever. And I also thought that health care was a birthright. Yeah, I grew up poor, but somehow my mother, who worked as a waitress, was always able to provide Blue Cross Blue Shield for us. The only time we used the hospital part that was at Blue Shield was when she decided all four of us, my two brothers, my sister and I, needed to have our tonsils out. But other than that, you know, none of us kids were ever, never, you know, went to a hospital. So the Blue Cross part of it was important. We could go to a doctor. I think my mother paid $2 a visit, or maybe it was a dollar. And I don't think they called it copay back then. I don't know what they did call it. So I just assumed, as poor as we were, and trust me, truth seekers, your boy grew up poor. As poor as we were, we had health care. It was just like, that's why I grew up with the misconception that healthcare was, you know, part of being an American. And what is Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton going to do about it? Well, essentially nothing. Essentially nothing. But to continue the same old, both of them. Neither of them would even consider, at least in the campaign, you know, you don't know what one of them might do when elected, if elected. But neither of them will consider single-payer health care in the campaign. Won't talk about it. There is a candidate who But if you want to know about Remote Area Medical Volunteer Corps, go to RAMUSA, RAMUSA.org, and take a look. That's about the only good news story I've got for you tonight. The rest of it is... Well, I guess this would be kind of neutral. The Guardian of the UK is reporting the construction of the U.S. Embassy in Iraq has now topped $700 million. Think of that. $700 million. And Henry Waxman, chairman of the Oversight Committee in the House, asked U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice today to explain, or not today, last week, to explain why the State Department certified that embassy as, quote, substantially completed, end quote, in December, despite the fact that inspections reveal continued deficiencies in everything about the construction. This thing is going to suck in, you watch, probably $2 billion because of the criminal fraud involved with the Republicans who are running the construction companies, who are sucking the Treasury as dry as they can. But the Bush administration is blocking an inquiry. Two U.S. State Department employees who worked on the embassy project are now under criminal investigation. Oh, this is just starting. This is just starting. Ballooning cost estimates, charges of corruption, shoddy work by the private contracting companies overseeing the project. This is just beginning. Waxman wrote to Rice, quote, it appears that the State Department is concealing from Congress basic information about the status of the embassy project. End quote. Well, the thing is, Henry, you have to understand that Condoleezza Rice don't know what the hell you're talking about. If pressed, I doubt if she would know anything about what? We're going to have a permanent embassy? And oh, really? In Baghdad? Can I have a big closet to put all my shoes in? So the Bush crime family says, no. You're not going to investigate. What the hell are you talking about investigate? You are the democratically controlled Congress. You do nothing but sit there and do what I tell you to do. And you know how the democratically controlled Congress responds? Yes, sir, Mr. President.
Rush Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Past the hour. Also on 60 Minutes last night, I want you to hear this. Hillary Clinton, the campaign has really gotten dirty, and most of them are the part of Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt. I don't care whether you're a Clinton supporter or a Barack Obama supporter. You know that Senator Clinton is really going for the gut because she understands what's at stake in tomorrow's primaries in Texas and Ohio. She knows what's at stake. The possibility of the end of her career. So she's pushing like crazy, and she's saying some stuff that whatever respect I had for her as a senator, and not much, I just have to tell you that there are not very many. She's not unique in that. There are not very many Democratic senators that I would give a hill of snot for, and she happens to be one of them because of their voting record. Not because she's a woman, not because she's white, not because she's Bill Clinton's wife, but because she has a voting record that turns my stomach. But anyway, Steve Croft and Hillary Clinton were on last night. In a previously taped interview, Croft plays for Hillary Obama answering after Croft asked why he believed the rumor about his faith had been started, about Barack's a Muslim. Of course, that comes from the filth in the society, the floaters, people like Drudge, people like Limbaugh, people like Hannity. So anyway, Croft asked Obama why he believed this rumor about his faith had been started, then showed the photo Hillary's campaign had circulated of Obama in traditional African garb and asked her about the rumor of Obama's faith. Good thing Croft didn't ask her if McCain had fathered an illegitimate black baby, huh? Anyway, Croft asked Obama... And here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask the Croft question. You're going to hear Barack Obama answer, and then you hear a beep, and then it comes back to last night's program live between Croft and Hillary Clinton. Croft asked Obama, one of the things that we found in southern Ohio, not widespread, but something that's popped up on a radar screen all the time, people talking about it, this idea that you're a Muslim. Where's that coming from?
You know, this has been a systematic email smear campaign that's been going on since actually very early in this campaign. Clearly, it's a deliberate effort by some group or somebody to generate this rumor. I have never been a Muslim. I'm not a Muslim. These emails are obviously not just offensive to me. Somebody who's a devout Christian who's been going to the same church for the last 20 years. But it's also offensive to Muslims because it plays into, obviously, a certain fear-mongering there.
You don't believe that Senator Obama's a Muslim?
Of course not. I mean, that's, you know, that there is no basis for that. You know, I take him on the basis of what he says, and, you know, there isn't any reason to doubt that.
You said you take Senator Obama at his word that he's not
right,
a Muslim. You
right.
don't believe that he's a Muslim.
No,
I mean,
no, why would
implying,
I? There's no,
right.
no, there is nothing to base that on, as far as I know.
It's just scurrilous.
Look, I have been the target of so many ridiculous rumors. I have a great deal of sympathy for anybody who gets... you know, smeared with the kind of rumors that go on all the time.
Unless maybe it's a rumor that you, somebody in your campaign might have started. What's up with that? Hillary Clinton says, I take him on the basis of what he says. And, you know, there isn't any reason to doubt that. Weasel words, Senator. Weasel words of the worst kind. And as Barack Obama points out, at least he had the decency to point out that it's offensive to him as a Christian and offensive to Muslims, because it is saying that if you're a Muslim and have the temerity to run for president or run for dog catcher or run for the House, like we have one Muslim in the U.S. House of Representatives now, that somehow you're a terrorist, I guess. And when Croft says you said you take Obama at his word that he's not a Muslim, you don't believe. And she says, as far as I know. Oh, for Christ's sake. Now, here's a sound clip that the McCain campaign is sure to use in the near future. Hillary explains why she and insane McCain are qualified to be president, but Barack Obama is not. This is from a campaign speech she gave in Toledo, Ohio, today.
I have a lifetime of experience that I will bring to the White House. I know Senator McCain has a lifetime of experience that he will bring to the White House. And Senator Obama has a speech he gave in 2002.
Oh, my God. A Clinton endorsement of McCain. Well, folks, there you have it. Can you play it one more time for me, please? Listen up. This is Hillary Clinton.
I have a lifetime of experience that I will bring to the White House. I know Senator McCain has a lifetime of experience that he will bring to the White House. And Senator Obama has a speech he gave in 2002.
That, of course, is referring to Barack Obama's strong criticism of the Iraq War resolution that Hillary Clinton voted for twice. Oh, my goodness. So McCain will bring to the White House, I guess Hillary means if she runs against McCain, she will. If Barack Obama runs against McCain, McCain will, I guess. Oh, well, it's politics. Uncle Mike's Story Corner after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Wow, let's keep it coming. Wow, rock while I drum drumming. Destiny got the whole world freaking something. We killing something. Somebody better warn y'all. Free Michelle and Kelly, put that jelly on y'all. Rock and Missy be hot like California. Won't you sing the hook? Why don't you? Now here we go.
Move your body up and down. Make your booty touch the ground. I can help but wonder why.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. And once again, kiddies, it's time for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Everybody comfy? Oh, pull up a big fluffy pillow. Curl up. And it's time for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight we have two chapters. The name of the first chapter is The Day the Earth and Sky Traded Places by Jennifer Lowenstein. Around 10:30 p.m. on the night of February 28th, M and his wife S spoke in low tones in a dark room dimly lit by a battery-operated lamp. They were trying to decide if it was still safe to send their children to school and decided in favor because the elementary school building is in a safer part of the city near a number of international offices. The electricity in the building had been out 10 hours by then, and the couple pulled blankets around them to keep warm in the damp winter air. They lived on the 6th floor of Shifa Tower, an 11-story apartment building housing more than 100 families. When the blast occurred, they took out the Interior Ministry building across the street. There was no time to think about what to do. M flew into his children's bedroom and threw himself over the sleeping body of his son, Basil, to shield the young boy's body from the glass shattering in the windows beside his bed. Then, after a matter of seconds, the three young children, two girls and the boy, were taken to the windowless kitchen, all of them now fully awake and crying out in terror. M threw blankets and pillows around them while they huddled for the night in restless sleep and dreams of horror, their mother sobbing silently over them as she caressed their faces. M returned to the children's room in time for the second deafening blast that made him put up his arms instinctively. When he let them down and looked out into the night sky, it was all brown. The earth from underneath the destroyed buildings was swirling around outside the bedroom windows, and he could see nothing but flying debris, smoke, and a wall of dirt. For some time he could not hear well, only watch, dazed, hypnotized by the silence after the aerial strikes. In the morning, no one went outside. M wrote in his diary, "This is a black day in Gaza. A holocaust," as Israeli Deputy Defense Minister Matan Vilna put it. "There is an attack every 5 or 10 minutes. It keeps on our nerves on edge and our senses strained. There is so much rage at what is happening, especially the scenes of murdered children and babies. I'm so busy I don't know how to describe my feelings. I work to avoid feeling because right now that's too unbearable. Watch as a Hamas soldier runs for his life into his house. His pursuers miss shooting him, so they launch three rockets into the house on the edge of Jabalia camp, killing everyone inside. They are angry now, so every house in the way gets the same treatment. And without the so-called militant to guide their next moves, rockets fired into the interiors of homes with no knowledge of who is inside. Eyewitnesses report this and worse. A six-month-old baby girl becomes tiny body parts with her mother and brother. A small child is cut apart by shrapnel and screams that she doesn't want to die just before leaving this world. The mothers and fathers cannot protect them, so they weep and scream at the funerals that this side of the world never views, especially during basketball season. Who really cares about these children? Every Palestinian is a militant because everyone, sooner or later, wants Israel off their land, out of their lives, and forgotten, like a horrible dream. It is for this reason that they are all equal targets. None of them is intelligent enough to understand that their land isn't their land, their lives are not their lives, and their horrible dream is their present and future. Have no pity on those who don't get it. The night strikes from F-16s and helicopter missiles continue throughout the day on Friday the 29th and into the first weekend in March, unceasing in their ferocity and indiscriminate killing. Revenge for the death earlier last week of an Israeli student at Sapper College outside Sderot. For everyone Israeli life, scores of Palestinians must die. God help us now that two Israeli soldiers have been killed fighting on occupied land against unwilling slaves, killing innocent people to maintain a 60-year-old injustice. Brace yourself, Gaza. You will pay dearly for the continuation of this crime. Let us not reflect too much on what all this means. How, for example, would the 47-year-old Sapper College student like to know that his death has been far more useful to his state than his life? For in death he provided another pretext to carry out mass murder of the Arab Untermenschen, blocking the otherwise pleasant view to the sea in the southeastern Promised Land. His death challenged the Israeli rules of combat. The rules state, we kill and you die. The only type of warfare allowed by the neo-Jewish masters and their allies in the United States, who have no intention of making a just peace with the lower forms of life in their midst. The sanctimonious demand that the Qassam missiles must be stopped is a deliberate lie intended to make you forget that the Qassams provide a near foolproof pretext for grabbing more of Gaza and settling more of it to ruin, and that the Qassam missiles are the result of systematic national torture and evisceration born themselves of occupation, caused by it, improved upon by periods of siege, sadism, and mass killing. Peace would require relinquishing regional hegemony. Peace would demand sharing the land and the resources equally. Peace might, heaven forbid, require democratic decision-making in a region where the Israelis are not better, are not more entitled, are not more deserving of their way than everyone else in the neighborhood. Well, sorry, but these are not on Israel's agenda. The leaders of the hapless Sderot students, racially pure dreamland, are grateful for his dying. Now the angry flames of intolerance can burn on feverishly. Into those flames, the bodies of each dead Gazan man, woman, or child should be flung like books to consecrate the ritual, the burnt offering of those who owe the latter-day Israelites their modern-day Zion. In holy victimhood shall we reign supreme. Surely, this would satisfy Interior Minister Meir Shitrit, who bellowed that if it were up to him, Israeli soldiers going into Gaza would shoot, quote, everything that moves, end quote, like babies and toddlers, grandfathers and mothers, orange trees and wasted away donkeys pulling cartloads of rotten vegetables, like flowers and seabirds, chickens and goats, rats and cockroaches. A scorched earth policy will suffice. They'll create their apocalyptic wilderness and we'll call it peace. No one needed Minister Shitrit to legitimize the strategy of creating oblivion from hell. Untermenschen who can be denied food, water, fuel, electricity, medical supplies, the right to leave and return home, the right to not die in an ambulance, that without the proper permits can't make it to the hospital, the right to their own land and their own nationhood, precisely because they are lesser human beings, can also be picked off one by one or in groups or in families or because they are militants or all of the above, who deserve no fair hearing, no due process, no photographs, no names, headlines, stories, no grief, no televised tearjerker funerals to commemorate their sacrifices. In such a world, contexts are an insult to the intelligence of the policymakers. Plea after plea from human rights organizations, legal organizations, religious charities and leaders, children's welfare organizations, medical aid projects, refugee relief societies, international humanitarian agencies, celebrities, parliamentarians, foreign policy analysts, and countless others go not only unheeded, but unread, unheard, a waste of one's time. Is there a reason why the carnage in Gaza is continuing before our very eyes and no state or non-state actor strong enough to make a difference is bothering to step in? The shame is ours. For Israel and its U.S. master have long since resided in the lowest circle of hell for betraying the name of humanity. Jennifer Lowenstein is the Associate Director of the Middle East Students Studies Program at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. She's a member of the board of the Israeli Coalition Against House Demolitions USA and founder of the Madison Rafah Sister City Project. Sharifa Siri. I don't know where to start from. I'm watching Palestinians in Gaza digging with their bare hands to find bodies under the rubble of a building which was completely demolished by Israeli shelling a few hours ago. The Palestinians just found a body, if this is what I can call it. The body consisted of a foot and a headless torso with half a leg hanging. Like every day, I'm watching horrible images which no longer shock me as they used to. Yesterday or the day before, I watched, however, a scene that will haunt me forever. It's about the five-month-old baby Mohammed al-Borai, who was killed 2 days ago. It is not so much the picture of his dead body that disturbed me. It is the image of his father carrying the small body and standing in front of the open door of the mortuary refrigerator where he was supposed to separate from his child and leave it there. Mohammed's father held his child for a while, and in front of him, the refrigerator was already full of other bodies. He knew that he was to place Muhammad near one of those bodies and close the refrigerator door, leaving Muhammad alone in the cold and in the dark without his parents for the first time. This father's image broke my heart. I will never forget this image, and I will never forget who is to be held responsible for it. Earlier today, I heard the testimony of a Palestinian woman who had survived yesterday night's Israeli onslaught. She was sitting alone silently with a 3 or 4 year old in her lap. I won't forget what she said either. The Israelis hit us with a missile. I could see them. Then the ambulance took them away. I went to the hospital looking for them. I found my eldest son in surgery and his father and brother in the refrigerators. I cannot close my eyes or ears and ignore what is happening in Gaza or in the West Bank. The least one can do as a human being is to listen to the Palestinians and convey their plight. Tonight is the third night of consistent Israeli bombing. Ambulances are mostly unable to reach the injured because Israelis fire at them, injuring and even killing the medics. For hours throughout the night, the injured lay there torn in pieces with amputated limbs or burnt bodies alone in the streets of Gaza or buried alive under the rubble of a shelled building. It is only at dawn when the cowardly Israelis withdraw that help is able to reach the wounded who often haven't managed to survive the night. Israelis are out to inflict maximum pain and harm, even though they know that they are essentially attacking a civilian population that includes many children, women, and elderly, who are mostly unarmed and not equipped to defend themselves. Tonight, Israeli air raids are continuing, and again, the injured are left to suffer alone and die. To add to Palestinian misery, ambulances and hospitals are running out of fuel because of the criminal siege imposed on Gaza. The whole world is able to come out and condemn the resistance for using $10 Qassam rockets that have hardly caused Israel, or rather illegally occupied Palestine, any harm. But this entire world community is silently watching Israeli Apache F-16s, Navy and tanks bombing with proper missiles made in the USA, bombing a 99% civilian population that is living in UN refugee camps in occupied Palestine, a land that Israel is illegally occupying, lest the world have forgotten.
Rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 7:30 before the hour. The London-based human rights organization Amnesty International has condemned Israel's attacks on Gaza, claiming they are, quote, being carried out with reckless disregard for civilian life, end quote. The statement from Amnesty goes on, Israeli military attacks over the last few days have killed more than 75 Palestinians in Gaza, including at least 10 children and other unarmed civilian bystanders not involved in the confrontations. That's according to Malcolm Smart, director of Amnesty's Middle East and North Africa program. He said yesterday, quote, Israel has a legal obligation to protect the civilian population of Gaza. Such attacks are disproportionate, go beyond lawful measures which Israeli forces may take in response to rocket attacks by Palestinian armed groups, end quote. The statement went on to say, quote, all unlawful attacks must stop. Israeli forces must put an immediate end to disproportionate attacks and collective punishment in Gaza. And Palestinian armed groups must immediately stop the barrage of rockets into southern Israel, end quote. In its statement, Amnesty highlighted disproportionate casualty statistics in the conflict, saying that in the last 2 months, close to 200 Gazans, of whom around one-third were unarmed civilian bystanders, including 15 children, have been killed. In the same period, the statement continued, quote, one Israeli civilian was killed and several injured by rocket fire. End quote. The statement said that the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, actions this week displayed what Amnesty called, quote, a disproportion and recklessness that has characterized its operations in Palestinian territories, end quote. At the same time, Amnesty argued Palestinian armed groups who launched frequent rocket attacks from Gaza into nearby Israeli towns not only showed a, quote, callous disregard, end quote, for the lives of Israeli civilians, but also exposed their own population to Israeli counterattacks. It just never stops there, does it? And Matan Vilna, the deputy defense minister in Israel, said he gave a warning last Friday, I believe, that the Gaza faces a, his word, holocaust. If Islamist militants there do not end their daily barrages of homemade Qassam rockets. The use of the word Holocaust is usually restricted to descriptions of the Nazi genocide of the Jews in Europe in the Second World War, and many Israelis resent its use in any other context. Minister Vilna's deployment of the word appeared to show Israel's growing frustration that Hamas and other militant groups in Gaza refused to curb their attacks, despite heavy tolls inflicted by the Israelis in their airstrikes and tank raids. In Israeli media, this is from the Times Online, as Israeli media relayed his controversial comments, Mr. Vilna's spokesman was forced to issue a clarification. Quote, the minister used the Hebrew term Shoah, which means catastrophe, and in this context does not refer to the capital S Shoah, the Holocaust, end quote. Israel has killed more than 30 Palestinians, including four children and a baby, in the past 2 days amid a dramatic escalation of the cross-border war. Palestinians have fired close to 130 rockets in the same period, killing one man on an Israeli campus. Many observers worry that Israel could be dragged back into a costly long-term military occupation of Gaza. Mr. Vilnai said, quote, "We're getting close to using our full strength. Until now, we've used a small percentage of the army's power because of the nature of the territory," end quote. Thousands of Gaza residents rallied last Friday after prayers to protest against the increased Israeli raids, with children holding up placards saying, "They've killed my right to childhood." No, it never stops. It just never stops. And that's not a good thing, is it? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Another attack by Mark Penn, who is Hillary Clinton's campaign manager and chief strategist. By the way, did you know that Mark Penn is also the CEO of one of the world's largest public affairs firms, Burson Marsteller? And Burson Marsteller's Washington, D.C.-based lobbying subsidiary is headed by one of John McCain's top advisors, a Republican lobbyist named Charlie Black. And about 10 days ago, both men attacked Barack Obama in the pages of the Wall Street Journal in the same article using the same attack. Mark Penn spoke for Clinton and Charlie Black spoke for McCain. Now, their message was simply Obama isn't ready to be commander-in-chief. It's the second. That was the second time in the previous week that the Clinton and McCain campaigns have coordinated their attacks on Obama with the same argument that he's not ready to be president. I mean, this is astonishing. Does anybody care? I'm addressing this specifically to Hillary Clinton supporters. Does it matter? Does it matter to you that the chief strategist for Hillary Clinton's campaign, Mark Penn, the one who apparently is coming up with this stuff, instructing Hillary to go on 60 Minutes and say, well, if he says he's not a Muslim, I haven't seen anything to indicate he's a Muslim. You know, that kind of garbage. Do the Clinton supporters care about this? I mean, maybe not. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe it just doesn't mean a damn thing. Nothing. Zero. Zip. Zilch. But the fact that her chief strategist it works for the same firm and is a partner with one of McCain's top advisors, Charlie Black. I don't know. Does that have any effect on you at all? I'm not saying that it should. I mean, most people know that the Democrats, the top level of the Democratic Party, that is the top level with the most money, and the top level of the Republican Party, is essentially the same. There is not that much difference in the positions of Hillary Clinton, John McCain, or for that matter, Barack Obama. Look at what they are saying. and look at their records. Now, on the war, yes, Barack Obama stands apart from the invasion and occupation of Iraq, but Barack Obama was not a senator in 2002 when he made his speech. He was in the Illinois House, if I'm not mistaken, or the Illinois Senate. But other than the difference on Iraq, that 70-75% of the American public now sees as what the anti-war protesters, including people like Kathy and me, and how many people do you know who were anti-war protesters all those bloody years ago? We were right. The Bush crime family was wrong. The supporters, the Republican pigs who supported this, were wrong. The ignorant Americans who bought into and still buy into that Saddam Hussein led the attack against this country on September 11th, you people are dumber than bat snot. I've never seen anything like this. I really haven't. The ignorance that's put out there carefully in a very cultivated way by these right-wing filth on talk radio. But Barack Obama, whether you support him or not, can you admit that McCain and Clinton are double-teaming him? Is this the way to go? Probably so. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, does it, Truth Seeker? Now, there is a Democrat out there who had... Oh, never mind. Regarding the statements by the Clinton campaign that Barack is saying he's against NAFTA, but he's reassuring the trading partners in NAFTA, Canada and Mexico, that he's really just kidding. That's the newest attack by the Clinton campaign. Well, the Canadian government now has had to get into this. Canada, this is from Reuters News Agency out of Ottawa, the capital. Canada defended Democratic frontrunner Barack Obama today over accusations from Hillary Clinton that he is secretly at ease with the hemispheric trade accord, which he publicly blames for losing U.S. jobs. Clinton's criticism on the eve of the make-or-break presidential nomination contest for her in Ohio and Texas, the criticism stemmed from a report by Canadian television station CTV that an Obama economic advisor told Canadian officials that the candidate, Barack Obama, was not seriously considering disrupting the trade accord, NAFTA. But the Canadian embassy in Washington has now released a statement essentially backing up the Obama camp's version of the meeting between advisor Austin Goolsbee and officials at the Canadian consulate in Chicago. The embassy statement said, quote, "There was no intention to convey in any way that Senator Obama and his campaign team were taking a different position in public from views expressed in private, including about NAFTA. We deeply regret any inference that may have been drawn to that effect," end quote. Okay, now this came out excuse me, 7 p.m. Eastern Time tonight on Reuters. I don't know if it had an earlier release or not. But will Senator Clinton tomorrow retract her statement? Because the statement indicates that Barack Obama, like Hillary Clinton, who are both saying NAFTA bad, NAFTA took away many jobs from American workers, NAFTA will be refigured, NAFTA bad, ooh, we all hate NAFTA. Hillary is putting out the idea that Barack is saying that, and then turning around in sotto voce, off stage, saying, just kidding, don't worry about it. Which, according to the Canadian embassy, is not true. So will there be a statement from Senator Clinton tomorrow? Will there be a statement from Senator Clinton tomorrow saying that she knows Barack Obama has been the member of the same Christian church for 20 years? Barack Obama is not a Muslim, not to my knowledge. I don't know. Is he? Who said he is? Oh. Okay. Phil in Iowa wrote to me, he says, I cannot believe the lies, fear-mongering, and Muslim innuendo the Clinton campaign is throwing out there to see what will stick. Hillary is relying on the Democratic electorate in Texas and Ohio to be dumb, the way all Republican candidates count on their electorates to be ignorant and uninformed. I believe it will work. Hillary had a chance to say on 60 Minutes, Barack is not a Muslim, but she said, not to my knowledge, leaving just that bit of innuendo in doubt. Her campaign ads can be compared to the infamous one Lyndon Johnson pulled on Barry Goldwater, but amazingly, the Democrats are doing this to themselves. You see, Mike, I'm 40 years old. My generation is tired of this crap. I'll use this analogy. It's like the Democratic Party is being drowned by a bully named the Republican Party. I'm watching and I want to help, but I know if I go save them, they'll just end up back out there with that bully drowning them again. The answer is Barack. Barack beats McCain 47% to 40%. Excuse me. Hillary loses to McCain 50% to 38%. Should she manage to lie her way into the White House without revealing her tax records, she will be so hated she won't get anything done. When the campaigns actually concentrated on the issues here in Iowa, we listened. And I think we made the right choice. But it is no longer about the issues. I was happier a month ago when we all agreed they'd make a great president, either one of them. Now, apparently, Barack will get us attacked, killed, nuked, and handle any emergency with great carelessness. Sure, it's politics, but we Obamacrats don't have to play along. If Obama should lose, I will vote for Nader. Those that vote the party line may be better than me, but I'd rather see them all, both, drown a little longer until they are ready for real change in this country. America, had enough yet? Phil in Iowa.
You're a nation of sheep, led by a handful of pigs. You're a nation of sheep.
Representatives of the government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization represented respective Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
You dumb bastard. If Al Jazeera website would have listed the fact or published the fact that the UK's Prince Harry was in Afghanistan with a combat support unit, actually a combat unit. What do you think would happen? The fact is, Al Jazeera didn't report it to Americans. It was the Drudge report. Drudge provided material support to Al-Qaeda and Taliban forces. Brandon Friedman, writing at vetvoice.com, had this up on Saturday. Matt Drudge has provided material support to Al-Qaeda and Taliban forces. The people who, if you believe the official story, were the perpetrators of 9/11. And how did Drudge do that? He divulged highly secret information to them, Al-Qaeda and Taliban, about NATO forces currently fighting in Afghanistan. Specifically, Drudge revealed that Britain's Prince Harry was serving in combat there. And as Friedman goes on, with Prince Harry, his fellow troops, and the mission itself endangered because of Drudge's revelation, the British government immediately took Harry out of the country. The effect on his unit, its cohesion, morale, and ability to sustain its mission against Al-Qaeda after such an abrupt change in leadership is uncertain. It is not yet known how long Matt Drudge has been providing support for Al-Qaeda or whether he intends to do it again. Similarly, it remains to be seen what, if any, other forms of aid and comfort Matt Drudge has provided to the enemy. However, we do know that Matt Drudge is unrepentant. Friedman goes on, I realize this is no longer breaking news. However, this story isn't getting the attention it deserves in the U.S. The fact is, Drudge, at the very least, should be made a global pariah. Likewise, Americans should begin pressuring his advertisers to leave his website. To get the process started, I've compiled a list of those companies that have advertised on the Drudge Report in the past hour. They should certainly be made aware of how their advertising dollars are being spent. And he makes a good point. Here's the list. I'm just going to go fast. You can just figure this out yourself, or you can go to vetvoice.com and look for Brandon Friedman's log on Saturday just passed. But it's Gold's Gym, Vonage, Chevrolet, Old Spice, T-Mobile, Netflix, Pizza Hut, Universal Orlando Resort, Bank of America, University of Phoenix, eBay, 1-800-PetMeds, Ameritrade, University of Oklahoma Press, and XM Radio. These are companies that advertise on on Matt Drudge's website. And Matt Drudge is providing aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States. How long has he been doing that? That's the question Brandon Friedman asks. You know this. Matt Drudge has no loyalty to anybody. He's a freelance pig. No loyalty to anybody. He is a very strange, twisted man who has no problem outing a soldier in combat who the whole world knows, if the soldier is identified, he will be a prime target to lose his life. Now, if you know, you might say, "Out of hell with it, I don't care." Okay, that's one way to look at it. But another way to look at it is the fact that Matt Drudge is providing material aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States in Afghanistan. Now, you may reject that. You may say, "Malloy, there are no enemies of the United States in Afghanistan. They've all moved to Pakistan." Okay, whatever. But you get my drift. I know you do. You understand what I'm saying. So, top secret information provided to the enemy by Matt Drudge. And the weaselly, pop-eyed son of a bitch will get away with it. It'll just continue. And you know why? Because he is a right-wing neo-Nazi. That's why. Who has no allegiance to this country, no allegiance to any fighting unit, no allegiance to anything. Nothing. And you may say, "Well, that's a good thing, Mike. Why should he support armies in war?" And to that I say, oh, get freaking real. Matt Drudge is interested in one thing, Matt Drudge. And no matter what would get in his way, he'll walk right through it. He would sell his mother's body if it meant that he would get another 500,000 hits at his website. You know it. I know it. Matt Drudge, providing aid and comfort to the Taliban. Wow. Why do you lie? Don't let your weakness show. You just might be the last to know. Freedom is such a loaded word, so full of hurt and bitter fun. Loneliness causes him to freeze, like at his knees it drags along. The time of your life can't be had for a song. Why do you lie?
Republican, the pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Yeah, regarding Matt Brudge providing material aid and comfort to an enemy of the United States, at least an official enemy, that's why we've lost, counting the deaths of U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, well over 3,000. We have murdered two countries, and Matt Drudge sits there with his little pork pie hat and reveals secret information for use by the Taliban. But you remember, William from Hollywood points out, Bush said that anyone supporting any terrorists would be jailed and all their assets frozen. Wonder what happened to that. I guess it only applies to liberals. In Bush world, William writes. Well, of course. Of course it only applies to liberals. What else do we have here? Well, I think, I don't mean to laugh. I didn't mean that little laugh. It's a laugh of frustration and weirdness. I got an email from Teresa in Spring, Texas. And she said, Mike, I think the end of this planet is near. I'm not a religious nut, but look at a few news headlines. For the first 3 days of March 2008 appears to be an indicator something is about to end. The headlines below were featured at Yahoo. Have a good end of life. The plug is being pulled. And then she lists the stories at Yahoo. Most of these are AP or the French news agency or Reuters. Let me see here. Yeah, okay, here you go. U.S. strikes Somali town, targets Al-Qaeda. Ahmadinejad demands that Americans withdraw from Iraq. 8 dead in clashes in Armenia, 40 dead in Pakistan attack, bombings hit southern Russian town, Israel pledges to press on with Gaza offensive, 61 people killed, Chavez warns of war if Colombia strikes Venezuela, regional tensions rise after Colombia's raid into Ecuador, Saudi Arabia advises its citizens to leave Lebanon, Sri Lankan clashes leave 24 dead. Oil executive faces drug charge stemming from woman's death. Family killed in Texas. Rapper shocked by daughter's killing. A six-legged octopus claimed as the world first in Britain. I guess that would be a hexapus. And last, but certainly not least, the Bush legacy is farewell to the Monroe Doctrine. Oh, and there was one more. Paragliding Chihuahua survives crash. Police rescue a Chihuahua and its owner stuck 115 feet up in a tree. Teresa, you're going to Yahoo News way too often, dear heart. Don't do that. Because that's where madness lies. Yeah, if you take a look at the headlines, it's really, really some scary stuff.
I bet you Pastor Hagee would have something to say about this, you think? Yeah. Pastor Hagee, what's going on?
Well, we're going to kill the Jews. Well, not right away. But the ones that don't become Christians when our Lord Jesus Christ comes back, we're going to kill them all.
Really? Do they know that? Iraq casualties rise again after Qaeda bombs. I thought the surge was working. 633 civilian deaths in February in Iraq. In Iraq. My goodness. Okay, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. Let's see if we can trick some people into calling us. Let's start with Aram. Aram, who is calling from Tucson, Arizona, listening on the internet. Aram, welcome to the program. Aram?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry, I was on headset.
Okay, welcome to the program.
I'm sorry, making dinner. Mike, before I get into what I was going to talk about real quick, why are we so concerned about him as commander-in-chief? That's one of the 14 jobs of the president. I don't want McCain in any one of them. I don't care if he's going to be a commander-in-chief or whatever. I don't want him to be our chief diplomat.
I don't want
him to be a chief executive.
Yeah, both Clinton and McCain are engaging in fear-mongering there because they both are warmongers. They will continue to be warmongers. They always have been warmongers, so they're trying to make the point that they would make a better head of a warmongering administration than Barack would, and they're probably right.
Exactly. Now, I have to get to my crux. Usually, I've called before, and I've agreed with you 100%. Today, I have to disagree a little.
Yeah, go ahead. It's
not a problem. I'm just concerned. I'm listening to, and I read a lot of blogs and news stories and opinion pieces on Israel, and how Israel is killing Palestinian children and Palestinian civilians, and how everybody is up in arms over that. My biggest question when it comes to that is, when a suicide bomber blows up a school bus, a deli,
Aram. I know where you're going with that. You get as much outrage on this program. You get outrage from Amnesty International. But here's what you have to understand. If you do not accept this, then let me reduce it from the personal to the general. Anyone who does not accept this basic salient fact is somehow, their comments, if they don't take this basic salient fact, are colored, tainted, twisted. The basic salient fact is the Palestinians see that country as their own. They were invaded and they are being occupied.
See, that's where you and I kind of
disagree. No, wait. There's no debate here unless you're going to pull the religion card on me.
No, which I'm not. Okay, then
nobody gave that strip of land to anyone.
The United Nations in 1947.
No, screw the United Nations. It was not the United Nations. It was the British. It was the Ottomans. It was the Jews. It was Palestinians, Arabs. Look. If you don't accept the fact that I'm saying to the Palestinians, I don't care what you think or I think, we're not there. My child is not going to be blown up by an Israeli gunship or a Qassam rocket this evening.
Okay.
So you and I cannot comment on this to the extent that an American Jew or a Palestinian Arab can. An American Jew who is part of the a peace movement in Israel, Lowenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Meir Kahana. In his book, They Must Go, before he began his racist screed against the Palestinians,
mm-hmm.
he stated, here's your basic starting point. To the Palestinians, they were invaded. They are being occupied. They're going to fight. They're going to fight forever until every last goddamn one of them is either driven out of our country or killed. Now, if you start from that point, then anyone who says that a resistance to an occupation is somehow illegal.
I'm not saying that.
Well, what are you saying?
I haven't said anything. You've been on a roll.
All right. Go ahead.
Sorry, Mike. It's kind of hard for me to get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
What I am saying, and what I have always said, and I am part of the NJDC, is I'm trying to figure out how much blood has to be spewed before people can actually say, you know, Israel can defend itself. I'm curious how many Israeli babies need to be blown up by a suicide bomber. I need to know how much blood has to be spilled by a Palestinian terrorist, by a Saudi terrorist, I don't care who. How much blood before Israel has the right
to occupy a country that's not theirs? Are you kidding me? Surely you're not applying logic here, are you, Aram? You're asking me how much Jewish blood should be spilled before the people who live there say, okay, you can have our country. You're not serious.
Well, coming at this from my mother's side of the family, how much Indian blood had to be spilled. You know, that's the thing, is that if you're going to say occupation, if you're going to say occupiers...
Is it
I'm
occupation?
Sorry.
Is it?
Yeah. From my reading of things like the Palestinian Hamas,
isn't there an obligation on the part of an occupying country to make sure that the country they're occupying, the civilian population that lives in the country they're occupying, is not being brutalized the way the Palestinians are being brutalized? If you want to take it to that level, which I don't think anybody wants to anymore, if Israel is not an occupying power, what in the name of God is it?
You know, I can't answer that.
Okay. Aram, I got to go. There's the music. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot. We'll talk again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
They fill the children full of hate to fight an old man's war and die upon the road to peace. Now this is our land. We will fight with all our force, say the Palestinians and the Jews. Each side will cut off the hand of anyone who tries to stop the resistance. If the right eye offends thee, then you must pluck it out. Then Mahmoud Abbas.
My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq.
Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq. Okay. Tom is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Hey, Tom.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. You know, this smudge report... And I got friends over there that are fighting for our, for whatever reason, but they're
over there. Right. I hear you. I hear you.
And, I mean, you know, this guy dimes out, you know, soldiers and endangers the other soldiers. And, you know, I think we maybe pick one of those sponsors on the judge report.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get the number out and call, you know, call right, you know, right where the CEO is and say, listen, we're not going to be buying your products anymore, and that's the only thing that people respond to. You know, you
can, it is. In a country that whose primary function is to go shopping, according to Bush, and Bush doesn't even call us citizens anymore. He refers to us as his consumers. In a society like that, the only way you can get anyone's attention is to threaten to stop buying their cheesy chump ass made in. China products.
Yeah, and what happened is if one of them pulls their ads, then it will become a story, and everybody else will jump on it and force the other ones to pull their ads too. Kind of like, you know how it works.
Yeah, but the problem is it only works like that against people who are not, you know, foul-breathed right-wing thugs. Like Don Imus, who was kind of an equal...
Yeah, that's what I was going to use.
Yeah, well, he was kind of an equal opportunity ass-kicker. He would kick Republican ass as well, Democrat ass. But in the final analysis, of course, Imus was more of a liberal or progressive. He would scream if he heard anyone say that. But with his, you know, the cancer kids thing that he does at his ranch that shows compassion and understanding of human suffering... The fact that he hates Hillary is aside beside the point. I think he is more of a liberal progressive. And when he said what he said about nappy-headed hoes, he got what he deserved. He got what he deserved. You don't talk like that. You can't say that. If he wants to say it about you know, some adult who can defend themselves, somebody on his program, but you don't say it about college student girls or what have you.
No.
Now, because... he was who he is. He got canned. CBS took him out. MSNBC took him out. And so on and so forth. And he went and stood in the corner until he was a good boy. Now you take somebody like Bill O'Reilly, who says, I don't want to join a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless she really said what she said. In other words, he's saying he will go lynch the wife of a United States senator. And now you have this pissant drudge providing aid and comfort to America's enemy. Who do you think is going to get disciplined? Well, that's right, Don Imus.
Yeah, things are just, they're just so, you know, it's like the rule. You remember that movie Stripes when they were playing poker?
Oh, yeah.
They were teaching, and they changed the rules as they went.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's what the government's like now. I mean, they just change the rules as they go along, and it's, you know, unless there's a bunch of people, hopefully, next election, it's so lopsided. You know, my personal thing with all this housing and stuff was they were figuring the Democrats might win, and we're hoping this is going to happen next year.
You mean they timed it wrong?
You know
the mortgage, the subprime mortgage.
Yeah, all the problems that are happening now. They were hoping it would happen next year, so people would blame the whoever the new regime is, if you want to call it that.
Which makes a good case for just saying to hell with it for the next 4 years, give it to McCain. You know, I said that earlier a couple of weeks ago. Provide a veto-proof House and Senate, and then give the presidency to McCain. That way the U.S. House and Senate can get their work done, because if he vetoes something, the Democrats can get their agenda passed. If he vetoes something, they just override the veto.
You know, it's much worse, this whole housing thing, than people even can have any idea. I mean, next year in California, I think there's like, or in the country, there's $40 billion of option arms that are resetting. Mm-hmm. So people are just living there now because they're probably spending $4,000 a month. And when the price goes up to $7,000 or $8,000, they're going to give them back. The salaries can't support, and it's going to be a big, much worse problem than people think right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year is going to be, I don't know, it's going to be very, very bad.
It's not already bad.
It's going to be worse.
It's going to get difficult to deal with the situation, and that's one of the reasons I think maybe, just maybe, Tom, it might be a good idea to let McCain have it. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate you checking in. I think, my two cents worth, we need a Works Project Administration equivalent. Now, I wasn't alive during the WPA, but my parents were, and so many Americans were around, and that was with the horrendous unemployment that we had during the Depression. The Roosevelt administration took a look at the infrastructure of this country and said, well, it needs to be cleaned up. So millions of people were put to work, and they were paid a living wage, repairing bridges and railroad beds and road beds and building parks and working to improve the infrastructure of the United States. Wouldn't you love to hear Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, or for that matter, forget McCain. Any one of the three come out and say, okay, we've got a problem. Granted, the numbers are skewed. It looks like there's only 4.9 unemployed in this country. Actually, the unemployment figure is closer to double digits. It's up around 10%. But the way the numbers are skewed now and jerked around and played with by corporate America and the Bush crime family, nobody ever really knows what's real anymore. You cannot cite me one single statistic that comes from this Bush crime family that is a true and correct statistic. It cannot be done because there is a political commissar in every single government office, including the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So it would be nice to see a Democratic president say to the American public, all right, we have a massive $1 trillion job ahead of us, and it's going to be done by American engineering firms, American construction firms, American workers. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take care of the deferred maintenance that has built up in this country for the past 30 years. Wouldn't that be something? Welcome back. It's about 7 before the hour, 7 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. We are right in the middle of doing phone calls, so let's get right back to it. Who's next? Dan is calling from Clinton Township, Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm all right, except for the fact that I cannot believe, sir, that you put Bill Clinton in the same category as a Republican like McCain and saying that he is a warmonger. How could you ever say that?
How many wars has John McCain started?
Oh, well, how many times has he been a president and had the opportunity to start
a war? That's a good point. Bill Clinton initiated the war in Central Europe the first time since the end of World War II when he ordered U.S. participation in the NATO bombing of Serbia. That's A. Actually, that's B. A is Bill Clinton authorized and maintained an 8-year-long attack against the civilian population of Iraq through periodic airstrikes and torturous embargoes. It was called the Oil for Food Program, I think. When Iraq was embargoed by the United Nations, nothing could go in, nothing could go out that had any kind of a dual purpose, which meant medicine and certain food and vital necessities. As a result,
Well, those are embargoes, sir. That's nothing.
When the numbers came out that 500,000 children had died in Iraq as a result of Bill Clinton's policies, Madeleine Albright was asked the question, "Do you think it was worth it?" And she infamously answered, "Yes, I do." Now, she's since retracted that statement because I think she realized, having a Jewish heritage, she realized what she was saying. She was giving a pass to an Iraqi Holocaust against 500,000 children. So when you ask me about putting Bill Clinton in the same category as John McCain, oh, it's easy as pie if you understand history. If you don't know history, Dan, then this is gibberish to you. It doesn't make any sense to you at all.
Oh, no, I can't say that I'm I know everything there is to know about history, but I can tell you
that. Well, no, when I'm talking about history, I'm talking about the last 15 years. I'm not talking about, the Roman Empire. I'm talking about the American Empire in the last 15 years. We're responsible for more death in the Middle East than anybody. We are.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you on that part, sir, but I do not agree in regards to, Bill Clinton being a warmonger. Maybe his policies inflicted pain or whatever.
No, inflicted death.
Death, okay. But was it by war? Is it in the same
What do you call an occupation and an isolation of entire country? Are you aware, Dan, that that's against the Geneva Conventions? You cannot lay siege to a country to the extent that the civilian population and the infrastructure like water and sewage and all the things necessary for the basics of life are threatened or destroyed. And we did that. Now, most Americans can't accept that. We file that away and say, no, not me. Yes, we did. And it was under Bill Clinton's leadership. See, Clinton could have stopped that at any point. All he was doing was continuing the policies of George Herbert Walker Bush. That's all he was doing. So,
yeah,
yes,
He was not a warmonger.
Yeah, he is.
Not at all.
Well, okay.
How is he being accused of, being so lax on national defense?
Well, that's what the right wing does. The right wing doesn't give a tinker's damn about truth. The right wing will take a warmonger like Bill Clinton and convince the brain dead, ignorant American public that he's soft on this and then yada yada and blah, 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 blah. When the fact is, Bill Clinton is responsible for more death in the Middle East than any other so-called player in the Middle East, with the possible exception of George W. Bush. But you got to understand something, Dan, if you want. No, you don't got to understand it. I'll just toss it out for you. Going back to Gulf War I, all the way up to this moment, the United States has perpetrated death and destruction on a scale similar to World War II in the Middle East. Not only have we done that, but we also have authorized the Israelis to do their bit. So when you say Bill Clinton is not a warmonger, I don't know. I don't know what you mean by that. I don't know where you're coming from. War is war. Telling a country that they will not receive the normal inner flow or outflow of goods and services because we don't like their leader. I mean, what the hell do you call that? That's what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. Iraq. Oh, God, why bother, Mike? To hell with it. I was going to say Iraq is really Mesopotamia. The Tigris and Euphrates River are supposed to have been the cradle of civilization. We've destroyed it. We've turned it into depleted uranium-infested death and destruction. And you're saying Bill Clinton is not a warmonger? Well, what the hell is he then, a good Samaritan?
I just don't even think Bill Clinton is relevant at this point. So, personally, I don't know why we're not talking specifically about Hillary. And why is Hillary still talking about Bill? Well, you know, what is that quote? Most of her foreign policy she learned as an observer watching her husband for 8 years. Well, I've watched you for 8 years, but I'm not a talk show host.
Oh, you're just too cute by half, aren't you? Dave is calling from Coconut Grove, Florida, listening on WINZ. Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome to the program, Dave.
Yeah, hello, Mike. I usually agree with almost everything that you say, but...
But?
I have to agree with the woman that called. Israel was formed by the United Nations, not by the United States.
So what?
The United Nations and the rest of the world voted to make Israel out of a territory that had no government, and the people that were there were invited to stay, but they left.
Put him on hold. I can't
United
take
Nations
this.
Passed.
All right, Dave, you're not going to come to my place of business and try to out-talk me. That's not going to happen. Now, I'm going to end the phone call because you obviously do not understand the history. You're coming at it from a very prejudicial point of view, which you are certainly entitled to do, but not on this program. You see? Not on this program. So, as far as the establishment of the State of Israel and what happened to the indigenous population there, that's like saying that the Native Americans in this, and this is a lousy analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway because I think somebody tried to use it on me tonight. That's like saying that the white people who came to this country actually told the Native Americans, well, look, we really want to get along, we'll work something out. Come on, Dave. Don't come to my program like that. And don't ever come to my program yelling and screaming, because I don't come to wherever you work, if you do work, and start yelling and screaming. Right? Isn't that fair? That's a fair request. But this is, I get this a lot. I love your program, Malloy, except where it concerns Israel and Palestine, you're crazier than hell. Well, I'm not, but if that's your opinion, that's fine. And I'll say it again, I have tried to educate myself since the first intifada, going back to, 84? So over 20 years, I've done my damnedest to understand from both sides of this issue. I have read Israeli and Palestinian writers. I have read fundamentalist Jews and Palestinian bomb throwers. And I have come to the conclusions I have come to.
Your millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Will you give me back my job?
Gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Yeah, an embargo to the person who called in who just can't see calling Bill Clinton a war criminal. I guess it depends on your definition. If the definition of a war criminal... or an act of war, I'm sorry. The definition of an act of war by international law includes embargoing another country, laying siege to it, which is essentially what's going on. It's a medieval tactic in order to, you know, bring the kingdom down. You set up your permanent perimeter around the castle and the walls, and you just sit there and wait until everybody gets diseases or starves to death. And according to the so-called rules of war or international law, an embargo, i.e. a siege of another country, is defined as an act of war. And as Prairie 2 says, the only thing that keeps Bill Clinton from being a war criminal is the fig leaf of a UN resolution. It's one thing to be a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. I will probably vote Democratic no matter who the candidate is in this election. Maybe not, but I'm saying, you know, I probably will. But to be blind to the war crimes committed by Democratic administrations is to put yourself in the same camp as these neo-Nazi right-wingers that suck around George Bush like cockroaches around a grease trap somewhere. It's just, I mean, if you're going to do that, okay, you know, far be it from me to call you a goddamn fool, but it would seem to me that being honest, having an honest sense of history, whether it's about Bill Clinton or the establishment of the so-called State of Israel, whatever your point is, if you are going to ignore the history and not the history written by one side, hell no. The history written, taken as a whole. Now, I've told this story before. When I interviewed Meir Kahane, before he even agreed to come on the show, he came here to Atlanta. And no synagogue would have him, because he was a murderous Jewish Nazi. That's all Meir Kahane and his Koch party was. They, or Koch party, however the hell you pronounce it. They believed in the total annihilation of the Palestinian people. No quarter. Get them out. That's why he wrote the book, They Must Go. Finally, an ultra-Orthodox synagogue here in Atlanta allowed or invited him to come and speak. But most of the Jewish population of Atlanta would have nothing to do with this nutbag. When I said, you want to come on the program, the first thing he asked me, he said, you want to talk about the Middle East? And I was going to make a joke like, no, I want to talk about the NFL. But I didn't. I said, yeah, I want to talk about... And the Intifada was in full rage then, the first Intifada. This is back in the mid-80s. First question out of his mouth. Regarding the Middle East, what's your scholarship? And I had to provide for him, over the phone, you know, he was in New York. I had to provide for him a list of books I had read and authors I had read, including him, including Noam Chomsky. And he agreed to come on the program. He didn't agree, and he came on and tried to convince me of the error of my thinking. But the first question, and I will never forget it, regarding the Middle East, what's your scholarship? What do you know? What have you read? How are you approaching this topic? And I try to, I don't. I'm not saying Meir Kahane was stupid. He was a brilliant man. Too bad his brilliance was used to attempt to exterminate an indigenous people. So I don't compare myself to the rabbi, but I will ask the same question. I've asked it. I've said it before. If you are going to come to this program and talk about the Middle East, you must tell Ian, who answers the phone call, what your position is and what your scholarship is. Now, I said that a couple of weeks or a week ago, and some smartass emailed in about what the, you know, what do you mean? What do you want to see, degrees? No, I don't want to see degrees. Of course not. Kahane never asked me about my degrees or where I'd gone to school. He said, what's your scholarship? What have you read? What do you know? What do you think you know? But it's, you know, I get those calls all the time, and I don't care. It's all right. It doesn't matter. I'm, you know, this has been going on for 20-some years. Well, I really agree with your program, Mike, except where it concerns your point of view on the Middle East. Because, Mike, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, to that, I can only respond, yes, I do know what I'm talking about, but... whatever, let's move on. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
But come Monday morning till the coming Sunday, they will fight their neighbor all along the way.
I'm thinking I'm getting away. Boy, if you don't love God.
If you don't love.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
25 before the hour. Oh, yeah, and keep in mind, if the person who was talking about Bill Clinton's not a warmonger, somebody else sent me this link to the ACLU. Bill Clinton was also responsible for this policy of rendition. The ACLU reports it this way. Beginning in the early 1990s and continuing to this day, the Central Intelligence Agency, together with other U.S. government agencies, has utilized an intelligence gathering program involving the transfer of foreign nationals suspected of involvement in terrorism to detention and interrogation in countries where, in the CIA's view, federal and international legal safeguards do not apply. Suspects are detained and interrogated, tortured, either by U.S. personnel at U.S.-run detention facilities outside the U.S. Sovereign territory, or, alternatively, are handed over to the custody of foreign agents for interrogation, torture. In both instances, interrogation, torture methods are employed that do not comport with federal and internationally recognized standards. This program is commonly known as extraordinary rendition. The current policy traces its roots to the administration of former President Bill Clinton. So, again, it's one thing to be a Democrat. That's a very honorable thing. It's something else, again, to either involve yourself in willful ignorance of what has been done under Democratic administrations. The latter being just inexcusable. If you're going to do that, then you must believe that the war in Vietnam was a noble cause. You don't accept the fact that the Johnson administration... Now, you can look at this one of two ways. Either Lyndon Johnson knew the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a lie, or He was lied to by the U.S. military that wanted the war. In either case, Johnson is responsible. He's the commander-in-chief. If there was any doubt about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, for instance, it was up to Lyndon Johnson to check it out, to get to the truth, before he committed 600,000 American troops and assisted in the slaughter that eventually left 2.5 to 3 million Indochinese people dead and 60,000 Americans. You know, blind, I'm reminded of Eric Hoffer's book, The True Believer. Eric Hoffer being a West Coast longshoreman philosopher who wrote The True Believer back in the 50s. I think the late 50s. Astonishing book. The True Believer. What someone who is utterly, absolutely convinced of the rightness of their cause, be it political, religious, imperialist, whatever it is, the true believer is unshakable. Willful ignorance applies. A closed mind applies. So, again, you know, Democratic political leaders, here's a news flash for you, don't walk on water. They're not the absolute good guys, and the Republicans are the absolute bad. Well, the Republicans are always in leadership positions, are always bad. Democrats are bad a lesser amount of the time, but in modern history, not that much less in terms of the amount of time that they're bad. And I don't mean bad like bad. I mean bad like evil sons of bitches, murderers, killers. Come on. Bill Clinton is right up there, right up there. A big difference, I think, is that the Clinton administration willfully participated in setting conditions, using the UN as cover, setting the conditions in Iraq that resulted not only in the deaths of 500,000 children, for God's sake. Oh, man. Nah. Let's go back to your phone calls. Rashid is calling from California, listening on KTLK. Rashid, welcome to the program.
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Mike. I think you're aiming for the back bay Clinton, but that's not my purpose of calling. I'm calling you about yesterday. Ahmadinejad, the Iranian leader, went to Iraq in a private jet, presidential jet. He landed in the eye of the war. And this is the man we call the axis of evil. This is the man who has been helping, training insurgents to go in Iraq and kill our men and women. This is the man who has been, we've been saying that he's building a nuke to wipe out Israel. Now, I don't understand. Maybe I'm delusional, but I've not had any outrage from the media, from you, the talk show hosts, saying something about this. This is the man we call the evil man. And yet he goes and we give him protection in a country we are fighting, and nobody's saying anything about it. But we are all, our concentrations is on blanching Hillary Rodham Clinton and her husband, that they are warmongers.
Okay, Rashid, let me try to understand. I don't know if you are being ironic. I don't know if you are being sarcastic. Here's what I do know. Ahmadinejad can take an airplane and fly into Baghdad and land and go meet with the premier, the prime minister. George Bush has to slip in under the darkness of night, surrounded by soldiers and tanks and Marines and military escorts. I would ask you, why is that? Why can the Iranian president just walk around Baghdad and talk with the premier and nobody's going to try to kill him? But if George Bush goes, he has to go with the full protection of the U.S. military or someone will try to kill him. Why is that?
You're answering your question yourself.
No, I'm asking you a question. Rashid, wait a minute. This is my sandbox. We have to play by my rules. Answer my question. Why does the president of Iran, why is he able to have a sit-down with the president of Iraq? They make nice, they talk, they have tea, they do their prayer beads together. He can walk, nobody tries to kill him, but George Bush has to fly in under the cover of darkness, sneak in, pop his head up, and sneak out. Why is that?
I guess because it's innocuous, stupid.
That's excuse me?
Rich.
Because
I
why?
It's innocuous.
Who is?
He's aqueous, stupid, if he does that. President Bush.
No. You're missing the guts of my question.
I'm following.
Why can Ahmadinejad arrive and travel around Baghdad freely and Bush can't?
Why? Question back to you. Why?
Okay, then I'll put you on hold and hang up, and you can listen on the air. I'll tell you why. Because the Iraqi people and the Iranian people, although they had an 8-year-long war of attrition, have come to realize that their bigger enemy, the enemy is not each other. The enemy is the United States. That's why. It is not Iranians who are killing Iraqis. It is not Iranians who have invaded Iraq. They tried and had their asses handed to them, although that war was started by Saddam Hussein. I mean, I'm not going to play word games with you, Rashid. The reason Ahmadinejad can arrive and depart and walk freely around Iraq is because he is not seen as an imperialist murderer who is there to do further destruction to a country that's already been reduced to rubble because of 15 years of sanctions and killing. That's why. Don't come to my program that stupid. Or ignorant. Don't! If you don't understand who the aggressor is in George Bush's wonderful little war in Iraq, and Bill Clinton's wonderful little embargo, and George Herbert Walker Bush's wonderful little war. And if you want to go back to what caused us to go there, it was because the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia were peeing their pants. They were terrified because the Sunnis in Kuwait were caught stealing Iraqi oil using slant drilling techniques. And the Iraqis said, wait a second. Saddam Hussein, the murderous dictator that we supported and backed and breastfed, because we believe that he would be a balancing force in that sad, murderous, blood-soaked part of the world. Don't come to my program with this kind of gross ignorance. Don't. Enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Woke up with a heavy head and thought about leaving town. Ted before the hour. Well, we've got the week started on the same footing we always start. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. Pamela sent me something from USA Today, political website, about Barack Obama and the infrastructure when I was talking about the WPA. I'm not sure what day, what date this is from. Probably not, maybe not today, I don't know. In a speech at General Motors Assembly Plant in Janesville, Wisconsin, Barack Obama will call for the creation of a National Infrastructure Reinvestment Bank that would invest $60 billion over 10 years in highways, technology, and other projects. It would be an effort, Obama said, to rebuild America and create 2 million jobs in the process. Oh, I remember when he said this. Yeah, Obama said he would pay for the bank by ending this war in Iraq. He also said, quote, it's time to stop spending billions of dollars a week trying to put Iraq back together and start spending the money on putting America back together instead. I agree with half of that statement. We are the ones who reduced Iraq to worse than a so-called third world country. We are the ones that have introduced death and disease and deformity and depleted uranium and destabilized government, everything. So I disagree with the Barack Obama if he is implying that we have no responsibility. We have a responsibility to get our military out as safely and as quickly as possible. But we also have a responsibility, not that we can ever be responsible for the systematic killing of all the people that have died in Iraq because of U.S. policy in that sad country for the past 15 years. You cannot take responsibility for that in any kind of a meaningful way. The only thing we can do is try to repair the damage that we've done. The water systems, the sewage systems, the electric grid, the delivering of energy to the Iraqi people, whether it's gasoline or oil or whatever the hell it's going to be. Restoring their banking system, restoring their civil service. Everything that we have utterly and absolutely murdered. So I don't know. This statement from Barack Obama was a very quick statement carried by USA Today. I think it's a good idea, rebuilding U.S. infrastructure, but we have gone to somebody else's house and flattened it. So we have an obligation there, don't we? Dan is calling from Franksville, Wisconsin, listening on the mic, 92.1. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, it's a good show tonight, just like artwork. I know it's pretty late. I'll tell you what, if you ever see my name there, you know, I don't care whether I get on your show or not, because you covered the subject so good. You don't have to. I'll wait for a different day, but since I'm on now, you know, these people calling in were, you know, they really don't understand history that well. I don't really get angry with them, really, but there's a guy, Michael Parenti. He did a talk about history had to be controlled, because if you let people know history, then, you know, then they might have some idea of where they came from and where they're heading.
That's right.
You know, but you should have him on for, if you look, get on his website, look him up. He's like, what?
Oh, no, I'm very familiar with the writings of Michael Parenti, trust me.
Oh, yeah, he's good. But on this stuff with Israel, I don't know. You know, I always heard the stuff about Israel is a democracy, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, that's funny. I mean, Thomas Jefferson says that you have to have an informed public to be a democracy. And as far as I can see, the news media over there is pretty, the mainstream news media over there is pretty much all censored. And, you know, when a bomb goes off in Israel, they got cameras coming down from every angle, every which way, whatever. But when stuff happens over there in Palestine, if anyone pulls out a camera, you're done. If you have an M16, they'll go for the guy with the camera first, immediately. And that's the same situation they use with the old manifest destiny routine here in America, where you doggone frustrate people and you make them desperate to the point where they strike out, and then you go, look at those evil people. You know, but you can do that because you don't. The Indians don't have the cameras or anything, and it's the same routine that Israel uses. They got all the power in the world. They have total control over what they want to do over there. They have all the power. They have all the money. If they want to have any dialogue or make anything happen, they can do it because they have all the power. The Palestinians have zero power. They control nothing. They cannot
negotiate anything because they have nothing to negotiate with. Now, I could go on, but...
Well, no, I hear what you're saying, Dan, and your points are correct as far as I'm concerned. I know I will have some listeners who send me the nasty emails and say I'm never listening to your filthy program again. Okay, I mean that's the risk that you take in American media. I don't care if you write a column or do a talk show or report the news. Well, not report the news, but anything that involves opinion. If the opinion is not in keeping with the AIPAC line or the line that has been prevalent in this country for all these years, which has nothing to do with respect for the Jewish people and everything to do with the Cold War, that, hey, yo, look around, it's over. But, of course, Bush is starting a new one. So, you know, the position I take on Israel, I've said it before, I tried to work along the idea of a two-state solution, and I'm pretty much convinced that's never going to happen. Yes?
I just wondered if tomorrow, if we could maybe talk about, I don't know, the election or...
Oh, yeah, we'll do that tomorrow night. Thanks for hanging out this evening. I appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night with the Ohio and Texas primaries. Oh, that'll be fun. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.